Hi, this is Alex with the Legislative Information Office calling for a sound check.
Hi, Alex. Can you hear me?
Yep, you sound good.
Okay. And number two?
Sounds good.
Number three?
Good.
Number four?
Sounds good.
Five?
Good.
Six?
Sounds good.
All right. Seven?
Sounds good. Just hang on 1 minute. Legislative Information Office. That sounds good.
Last one, how does this sound?
It sounds good.
All right, thanks.
You bet.
Meeting of the House Military and Veterans Affairs Finance Subcommittee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 5:16 p.m. on Monday, February 3rd, 2014. Present today are Representative Sadler, Representative Ledoux, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Representative Thompson. And I think we're going to have probably a couple more join us. Before we start, please turn off your cell phones so we won't have any interference with the recording systems. In today's meeting, we will hear from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs regarding their mission, core services, performance results, and measures, and we'll take a look back and then a look forward in the 10-year plan. Here to speak to us today is General Katkus, the Commissioner of the DMVA, McHugh Pierre, Deputy Commissioner, Lacey Sanders, our Fiscal Analyst from the Legislative Finance Division, and additionally, we have Susan Colligan from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Plus, we'll have Alaska Aerospace Corporation. President and CEO Craig Campbell will be online. And John Kramer is present in the room with us. He's Vice President for Administration. So we will begin this meeting with the General and McHugh. If you place yourselves on the record and start your presentation. And they're going to walk us through the FY14 increments, significant budget changes, and the 10-year projection.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. This is Tom Katkus. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I'm either one of them working.
We got
recording through okay?
Both of them working okay?
One. That's okay. I'll talk after this one. Tom Katkus, Commissioner, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and Adjutant General for the Alaska National Guard. Tonight, before we get into the mission, I kind of want to hit this video, the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs year in review for last year. It touches the wave tops of what the department did, and it kind of focuses on everything that is supported in our mission statement. So it puts a good visual to our words here. So if we get the light, and we'll hit play up on the walls.
And we've been joined by Representative Isaacson.
Did you bring popcorn?
No, we don't have enough moss.
Men and women who comprise this organization are our backbone. They have a phenomenal mission, they're in an incredible environment, and they have challenging tasks before them. Every day, they're successful. Every day, they provide for our safety. And every day, we are so very, very proud of them.
We found that person you truly want to become. Your parents, guardians, family, friends are all proud of you for taking this step, volunteering to be here today.
And people describe the entire scene from day one, but when we actually step foot on the ground and we go around and look at everything, it was clearly a catastrophe for this community. My impression is we got to get to work right away.
The idea was these lives have changed. Each one of us should be helping each other out, and we should only accept excellence from each other, and we should continue on with the same duties with each other on our lives.
Standing in front of you are exceptional men and women who have dedicated their lives to serve our great state and nation. We are still a nation at war, and we are bringing the fight to the enemy overseas. These relatively few soldiers are standing in the gap for our nation, for our families, and for the freedoms that we cherish. You will not be forgotten. You will be in our thoughts and prayers until every one of you come home safely.
Multi-faceted deal, multi-stages. He has the potential to receive a National Guard nomination to West Point.
You know, they said, you know, we'll attempt to do it. We want to
5 years, maybe 1,500 years, you know, so for me to even have the opportunity to be more successful in and of yourself, and so I'm just, you know, grateful for that.
Good morning, Colonel Ferguson, because you absolutely earned this opportunity for her. Because she's capable, she's fully trained. She is an incredible officer that represents the military well.
Acting with candor and integrity to earn the unquestionable trust of my fellow soldiers, junior, senior, and associates, and employing my rank and position not to serve myself, but to serve my country and my unit.
It's a personal achievement thing that people have, and there's this drive, and once people get hooked into it, it seems to be in the blood.
Seeing that and seeing the machines that they had, knowing where they came from, it was kind of a dream of all the time.
You said you really cool. Well, it's bucket list thing. Not everybody can do it. And you thought that you know what to accomplish that.
It's the first hard game to finish the
game. I was elated. I was very, felt very accomplished, very relieved. Very happy.
I was waiting for this day. It didn't seem like it was going to come, but it's here. It's awesome. It was great.
Well, first and foremost, as I look around the room, I want to thank the families, not only for coming here today, but I thank you for what you do behind the scenes every day so that your guards can come out here and train and be ready to go into action when our nation calls.
I think as we're setting goals, and I have a goal set for myself, so it allows me to kind of have a mindset. Things go by a lot quicker.
Plan to just keep going, keep busy, because you sit idle, you're like thinking and worrying and wondering, you know, what they're doing, you know, how many more days, but keeping busy, not sitting idle helps a lot. And I think having a support system at home, just being able to have friends and family, and anybody that can come and help if you need help. I think that it means I'm super proud to know that I have a husband that's fighting for our freedom and doing what he needs to do for the last one, National Guard.
So the Alaska Territorial Guard had a very critical mission. They stepped forward on their own, and they were organized in such a manner that they were truly community members serving their country.
Well, it's important to honor all veterans, no matter how long ago they served. The key part about the Alaska Territorial Guard members is they were released in 1947 with no honor at all. And so what we're trying to do is restore the honor that they have earned by their 5 years of service.
I think we're all doing good, but everybody's still like that shock moment where we still don't know what's going on yet, and it's going to hit people later. I mean, it hits people off and on. You get your highs and your lows every day.
Really?
I mean, I got to walk away from my house at night and just go look at somebody else and say, well, I'm not in that bad shape. I mean, we were downstairs, and within 4 minutes, it filled the whole downstairs. I would have been on one side of the wall, and I wouldn't have made it out of there. That's how bad it was.
We had floods on the Yukon that hit Galena and several other communities very hard, but they had plans. They had training. They had an idea about what to do and what the priorities were. Most of the other recoveries we've had been very focused and you get it done in a single season. Galena was hit so hard that many of these things had to be done in 2014. So we have to do all we can to stabilize it, which we did quite effectively, and all of those things we did because that's our charter and that's our motivation.
Get more now on our top story. Super Typhoon Haiyan last hour, the storm made landfall in the eastern Philippines, and it has all the makings of a major disaster.
The eye of the storm essentially went over Tacloban, just destroying the whole area and all the homes nearby, except for trucks, work with record trucks.
a lot of, just like on a lot of the outside cargo that the other planes can't carry.
And then on the way back, we put refugees jeans from Tacloban to Manila so they can have a place to stay after their homes were destroyed.
I'm averaging between 400 and 500 each trip.
Welcome to Manila.
That's great feeling. Not too many people have this opportunity from Alaska to do this.
We worked as a team out there, and everybody had a good time, made a lot of good friendships, and helped out a lot of people who were in need at the same time.
I have a couple of questions for you today. Is your life unique? Yes, indeed, for me, for the completion of a very rigorous academy, the beginning of a new chapter. You young Alaskans, and your valuable and irreplaceable life.
Since July of 94, over 2,000 lives saved in the state of Alaska from this office. The guardsmen here have been on console 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, providing this service for the citizens of the state of Alaska.
I do it just because I think it's a very virtuous job, you know, to be able to do things that I've trained my whole life at. I mean, I've been in the military 20 years, you know, and to use those things for virtuous activity to save other human beings, I think it gives back to you quite a bit.
The amount of coordination and planning that must have gone into this. We really appreciate it.
Step forward in the under fire, receive wounds in combat, and at the same time, save the lives of the fellow soldiers. This is just, again, one of those unique opportunities to make something right and make it work. Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. We owe so much to you standing in front of us today. Thank you for all that you've done. Thank you for all that you'll continue to do.
I'd like to note for the record that we've also been joined by Representative Lynn and Representative Grunberg. So we have a full committee today. Continue.
Yes, sir. As I mentioned, that video demonstrates our mission, our core services, much more than just providing military forces. Obviously, you saw the response to the emergency disasters that we've had in the state of Alaska. You saw how we're reaching out to our veterans and our youth academy. Some of those are the main areas, core services that we work hard in within our missions. So measures of core service, defend and protect America. We certainly provide an operational readiness through our inspections, through our search and rescue requests. The number of search and rescues, you saw that we 2,000 saves over a 20-year period. We certainly within 3 hours respond to all emergencies that are requested of us, and we are the final response capability or capacity within the state with our equipment. The end strength that we are shooting for has been consistent with our National Guard, approximately 2,000 in the Army and 2,000 in the air, and we are currently between 88-89% in Army, and our retention rates this year, though, have improved significantly. So our membership continues to hold steady as we continue to secure the missions that we've had. Our relevancy to the active duty, or our relevancy because of our association with our active duty, is certainly significant in that there are many other adjutants general that are vying for resources, and certainly we have no shortage of relevancy up here that justify the resources, federal and state, that are applied towards our uniformed services. In the disaster preparedness, we continue to reach out across all of the different communities in Alaska. And our preparedness now, as we get ready to exercise the 50th anniversary of the 1964 earthquake, which was one of the largest scale disasters in Alaska. Some of us were alive at the time, and some of us are now comparing, okay, what happened then is to now. It is the only response exercise that is of national significance this year also. So with all the constrained resources, there's a lot of emphasis for the national level that has visibility of this exercise coming up in the end of March. So as we continue to prepare our local communities, we are also, as a state, trying to get synergy from a lot of the different resources we're bringing together. Youth intervention, we continue to graduate a little over 300 students, at-risk youth, every year through two academies. We're very fortunate to have Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson still as the facility that supports on the campus of Camp Carroll, the austere area where these young men and women who have made some significant choices in their life that may have not turned out so well, they have made a great choice in coming to the Youth Academy and receive the assistance that they need to get their life back on track. And certainly we've got a great track record in youth intervention.
Anything I'd like to add there, sir? McHugh Pierre for the record, Mr. Chairman, Deputy Commissioner DMVA. We told you guys last year that our goal is to increase the graduation rate. We did that. Obviously it varies per class, but the class that graduated in August of 2013 was an 82 to 85% graduation rate, and that is the highest we've ever had. So we're continuing on with that. This graduation is the next graduating class, is in February, the end of the month, and we expect a 76% graduation rate for that class. So we are, with dropouts, higher than the school districts, which we pride ourselves with.
So our outreach to veterans, military families, certainly the requests up 60% last year. Several of the changes that we have made, number one, the move off of J-Bear was pretty significant in access to the veterans, but overall that didn't equate to the large influx that we had by getting out through our Yellow Ribbon program, where we got out to the communities and saw that in person, getting out, making contact with the communities where our veterans live was probably the most bang for the buck. As a result, to increase the veteran service officers and the veteran service officers that are volunteers, increasing that number has since increased by 60% the number of veterans served. So we went from roughly 20,000 to over 32,000. And what does that equate to? That equates to a significant capture of those earned benefits that each service member is entitled to. And those earned benefits directly translate into monies into the economy. It also translates into a much more stable family where, again, the governor's Choose Respect initiative and trying to address some of the problems that are centered around the families, we're also helping address that through our outreach with the veterans. A little bit more money into the families, a little bit more of the benefits, medical, et cetera, certainly moved that program forward significantly. We are looking at dollars that are invested at being almost 28 times returned by the time you look at all the different benefits. So if we put a dollar in, $28 back is an estimate on that investment towards the veteran outreach. So that's probably one of our most significant efforts that we're seeing. So if you took the two most valuable ones, what we do with the at-risk youth and then taking care of our veterans, we're getting the biggest bang for our buck right in those areas.
So, Mr. Chairman, McHugh Pierre again. With that, do you want to ask questions about some of our measurements that we have, or do you want to move into the 10-year plan, look back with Lacey, or?
Questions? I don't see any. You're getting off very lightly.
Very light.
Well, as you said, Mr. Chairman, we're all in the same seats. This is year two. We have a good understanding of what's happening here, so.
A lot of our main effort is to take care of what we started, get that finished, and take care of what we have. So we're not starting too many new initiatives right now. We're just trying to close up the loops.
Lacey Sanders. She's here from Legislative Finance Division. She will walk us through the look back. The look back is located on the tab called Financial Look Back. The Deputy Commissioner McHugh-Pierre will follow Lacey and present the 10-year department projection. Please come up and join us, Lacey, and place yourself on the record.
I apologize. I must have moved my stuff from the packet. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I work for Legislative Finance Division. You guys may be familiar with these charts and graphs from last year, so I'm just going to walk through them briefly. They've been updated to reflect the changes to the FY15 governor's request. On slide one is the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs share of the total agency's operating budgets. So for the department, they have approximately 0.49% of all of the agency's operating UGF budget. Very small portion. They are one of the lowest. They're at the very bottom. What you can also see on this graph is the change in unrestricted general funds that from FY06 to FY15. And you can see the change starting to grow in 2012. 13, 14, and 15, and what that reflects is the additional UGF that was appropriated to the Alaska Aerospace Corporation. And then in 2015, the department is having a fund source change for the Alaska Military Youth Academy. The unrestricted general funds used to go to the Department of Education, and due to a bill last year that passed, the unrestricted general funds no longer go to the Department of Education and are transferred to DMVA. They go directly now to DMVA. So you see an increase in 2015.
Question, Representative LeDuc.
So I want to see if I understand this correctly. Right now it's at 0.49%. And are you saying that we have the Department of Revenue, the Department of Commerce, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you compare it to all of the departments that, of the revenue that goes to all of the departments, that Military and Veterans Affairs gets 0.49%, is that what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, yes.
Less than half of 1%.
Yes. As you can imagine, the Department of Education and the Health and Social Services are the two larger. They take up a larger portion of the budget.
Question. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you. So, Lacey, what would happen if MVA was at its total staffing allotment? I heard they're at 85% or so. What if they were at 100%?
Through the chair, this reflects the appropriations that were made to the department. So this is any funding that they would need to fill their positions. Now, they may have some positions that are not filled, and the commissioner could probably speak better if you're talking about National Guard members not being filled or state personnel not being filled. I'm not sure where that number is coming from, but this is just reflecting appropriations to the department.
Gotcha. If the chair would allow, follow up.
Yes, go ahead.
Through the chair, McHugh-Pierre, for
it's
the record.
Working.
I'll speak a little louder.
McHugh, it's working.
All right, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Isaacson, what we have here is we have the 85% graduation rate for the Youth Academy. Just reflects the number of kids that come in and leave. If we had more kids, and say if we had 100% graduation rate, we would have to have a little bit more money to fund that. Just because all the expenses that go with it, the food, the different things like that. So we are budgeted at the rate that we're at. Our vacancy rate is another issue. We're funded at what we believe is a responsible rate. So as we have employees come and go, we have a vacancy factor of generally about 10%, and we operate well within that. We have a very high retention rate across our department. So this budget reflects a reasonable operation level.
Follow up.
Okay, thank you. And also for the Guards, Elements, Army, and Air, where are you at? I heard 2,000. You got 2,000 billets for each, and what's the counter? Did I hear that wrong?
No, there's roughly, on the Air side,
about 2,200, and there's about 1,950 or so for the Army. But that's changed as we adjust force structure. So roughly, just for simplicity, roughly 2,000 Air and Army are what our authorized strengths are.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I might follow up. McQPR, for the record, through the chair, Representative Isaacson, the thing that you guys have noticed here is that we're less than half of 1% of GF. And what does that really mean? Our department is essentially one giant match program. And so every one of our dollars goes to match another dollar. Generally speaking, obviously, there are some programs that are straight UGF. So for the National Guard, we have a cooperative agreement that we signed with the Pentagon that says we have what we have, and this is how we're going to execute it. If we have more soldiers and airmen or less soldiers and airmen, it doesn't impact the amount of money that goes into the cooperative agreement because we've said we signed on to X proposal, and it's our job to get as many as we can to maximize the federal dollars that come with that proposal.
And one last follow-up.
Follow-up.
What's your force strength then for Army and Air?
Total open slot.
Yeah.
Through the chair, I don't have those exact numbers, but I will follow up with that.
Okay.
I believe between 89% or so is off the top of my head.
Okay.
Be a good number.
Thank you.
Lacey, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm going to move on to page number two, which is a summary of the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs line items. This is all funding sources. And what this shows you is that over 50% of the department's budget goes towards personal services, and a large portion, 33%, goes towards services. In 2013, there was a large change when the legislature reduced approximately $26.7 million of excess federal receipts. They were empty receipts that were not being collected from the Alaska Aerospace Corporation. There's no questions. I'm going to move on.
Representative Gaddis. I mean, Ledoux. I'm sorry.
What's the difference between services and personal services?
Through the chair, personal services is the funding allocated for personnel. So each of your positions that you have identified, that's where the funding is allocated for those positions. The services is going to be funding for contracts.
You'll be on in a minute.
And that's the majority of it. Right?
Okay, so personal, even though it says personal, what it really means is personnel services rather than personal services.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Page three.
Page three. This page digs a little bit deeper into the personal services line, and on the total of the two stacked graphs reflects how much money they have in their budget for personal services each year. The blue across the top, or purple in some cases, reflects how much they receive for salary adjustments through union contracts or negotiated contracts. So what we've tried to show on the far right-hand column is how much the department has received over the last 10 years and the change. The majority of the Department of Military and Veterans Department of Military and Veteran Affairs budget has been for those contractual salary increases, approximately $10.6 million. They had a slight decrease, which would be moving money from the personal services line to other line items to cover contractual or commodity costs, and that was only $183,000. So the majority of their funding for personal services increases has come through the negotiated contract salary adjustments. On page four, this is a reflection of the department's change in personnel counts over the last 10 years. As you can see in the far right-hand column, they have decreased by three temporary, three part-time, and one permanent full-time position. It's remained very steady over the last 10 years. On page five, this is just general funds only. This graph breaks down the department into their three appropriations. They have the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, and National Guard benefits. And this is trying to paint a picture for you that shows where the growth has occurred in the department. And as you can see, the bold blue line across the top is the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. This includes Air Guard, Army Guard, the Commissioner's Office, Veteran Services, majority of everything with the exception of aerospace. And from 14 to 15, you see the large jump, and that has to do with the transfer of the unrestricted general funds from the Department of Education into the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs budget. You would see a corresponding decrement in the Department of Education's budget.
You recall that's what happened last year when they went out of the formula and took their education side solely by themselves. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Alaska National Guard benefits is in red. This is something I heard about from several members up north. Would you explain that decrease of $1.6 million, and also does it have any possible effects on retention and so forth?
Benefit as a state stipend was something that was put in place many years ago. As a person retires from the National Guard after 20 years, and the difference between age 60, to kind of make up for the fact that they are no longer receiving that guard check every weekend, once a month, was $100 for every month service in the National Guard that was attributed after 5 years. So if you're going to retire from the Guard, you've been in more than 5 years, you're going to get a $100 stipend for every month that you're in the Guard. So that's why it's very consistent, flat line, and projected out there. That has not been adjusted over the years. It's still $100. I'm sure that $100 is buying a lot less than it was a long time ago, but it's sending a message that the state itself has a dog in this fight that they are providing for their service members. It's a well-run program. Funded adequately. There's the ability to also draw that out with a slight penalty involved, but very predictable as our members go forward.
They can draw it as a lump sum or take it as $100 a month.
Sure.
Follow-up question.
Two, if I may, and I'll just put them both together. So have you considered doing a cost of inflation increase to make that continue to be viable, or do you hear much about that? Or on the other side, the second part of the question is in benefits, does this reflect the educational benefits? I understand that there was a cut to some of the education, and we did that last year, but have you seen a noticeable impact from that?
$100, it's a lot of people don't even realize they're getting this benefit until they retire. And it's certainly different than all of the other 53 states and territories in the District of Columbia that have comparable National Guard programs. We're kind of unique. So it is seen more as a token of appreciation and thanks, and that it doesn't add up to much, but it does in some cases. Myself, for 37 years, that's a pretty significant piece of money. And I'm certainly not going to be around for 37 years taking it 1 month at a time, so probably going to be penalized to draw it out at some point in time. But that's the type of thing. So like I said, it's well-maintained, well-managed, and we just haven't brought it to a lot of people.
And the educational side?
I'm going to pass it over to Jeff.
Mr. Chairman, you here again, through the chair of the Nevada. There's been no, negative result, negative impact, no lack of retention. The reason why that was a program that was cut is because when we looked across the department, we were looking at things that were must-haves and that were luxuries, and that was not a fully utilized program. So we were rotating about 66% of that fund amount back into the University of Alaska to allow more Guard members to attend the University of Alaska. So it wasn't being utilized the way it was designed to. And as we come into fiscally constrained environments, such as the one we're in now, we need to look at what are the most important pieces to have, and so that's why that went away. If there is a need in the future, though, as we've discussed earlier, General Packers and I did, as things change and as membership demands change, we're certainly willing to look at the way our budget is structured to maybe stop a different program and refund another program that used to be available because of the needs of the members. So that we're always open to that.
Just just for the benefit of the committee, Mr. Chair, if I could make mention, that was one thing I heard at Eielson, was that there were people using that, and it was our action that did reduce that, but someday we might want to look at increasing that again.
Thank I'm you. Sure they'll let us know if there's a bigger need.
Representative Eisenstein, I also have to bring up the fact there's a lot of federal education benefits that are out there that are very applicable that are being used beyond the state. A lot of the state ones were for an advanced degree also. So, again, as far as the initial entry folks coming in to meet the requirements that the military demands of an education, there's a lot of federal assets that are also being applied.
Thanks for the clarification.
Go ahead, Lacey.
Thank you. I would also like to follow up. Representative Eisenstein, you had a question about an earlier decrease. There is another tab in your guys' binder that has a summary of highlights of significant budget changes from 2006 to 2015. This is intended to be a tool for you to, if you have questions about something that happened over history, to be able to easily go back. It is not a summary of every single change that occurred, but just the highlights.
Thank you.
In your binder as well.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to page number 6. This is a similar chart to the one that we were just looking at. However, it's all funds. And the biggest thing that stands out on this chart is the decrease from 12 to 13. And, again, I spoke to that earlier. That had to do with the decrease in excess federal receipts authority that was deleted. Moving on to page 7. This is drilling down a little bit deeper. This is the allocations within the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs appropriation. Each one of the ones I listed earlier, the Veteran Services, the Alaska Military Youth Academy, each are outlined here in their budgets over the last 10 years. I added some notes across the page to try and highlight some of the changes for you. If there are any questions, I am available to walk through this in more detail if anybody would like at a later date. On page 8, this is a comparison of all of the funding groups that we have, which are federal receipts, other state funds, designated general funds, and unrestricted general funds. And this page and page 9 go together. They're the same information. One is just dollar amounts, and the other is percentage. And it just shows the change over time of where the increase in general funds may have been, which you could see in the last 4 years with aerospace and the Alaska Military Youth Academy. In 2000, from 2007 to 2008, there was a change in how the Alaska Aerospace was classifying federal receipts versus corporate receipts. Just giving you guys more history to look at. I'm gonna skip page 9, if that's okay, because it's the same information. It's identical. The last two graphs, and you can also help me with these as well. What we've done is the solid black line is historically how much money the legislature has approved for unrestricted general funds on page 10. We've calculated a continuation of that growth over the next 10 years, which is the dotted green line. So the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs budget grew by 7.4%. If you were to continue that growth over the next 10 years, that's where your general fund budget would be. The department also submits a 10-year plan, and we've entered that information into this graph, and that is the dotted black line. This is where they predict that they're going to go over the next 10 years.
Does that dotted black line include built-in salary adjustments and increases and increments and step increases?
It does not.
Okay.
The green line does. Okay. So there is a difference there.
Thank you.
And then page 11 is all funds, which is interesting because our dotted green line falls below the department's projection, which is very odd. It doesn't happen very often. A lot of times our projected growth continues to exceed where the department projects are going to be, but that is due to the large decrease in federal funds that we have.
Representative Ledoux.
So why does the, back to page 10, why does the department think that it's basically going to remain flat when the trajectory has it increasing? And how is the department's analysis that it remains flat? How does that work if you're not projecting the step increases with the salaries? It sounds like something's not working right there.
I think Representative Deputy Commissioner
has a great question. I'd like to think that it's you are much nicer to ledge finance, and we know the reality of the way you give us a strong look every year. We're facing the truth. No, I'm just joking. So we built in there the reduction that we're taking with aerospace and GS. So we know that aerospace is following their plan, and they'll talk to it in just a few minutes. They were very clear last year on how they were going to step down. They're doing it. They're stepping down 6 million requests, 4, and then 2. So, I mean, we've got a de-escalation, if you will, a reduction built in, and we're following that reduction. We also know that working with the governor's office, we're looking at ways to reduce the amount of money we ask for because we have to live within a fiscally constrained environment, and we're finishing things when we started. So that's where there's some difference, and I think Lacey can talk to the way she comes up with that, because if you do look at the 10-year graph and you only look at that 10-year window, it makes sense. We added a lot of GS for aerospace, and we, you know, but then we reduced a lot of excess authority. So that's why, and Lacey will tell you about that. I don't want to speak more.
Follow up.
But why wouldn't you include the step increases? I don't get it.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, they are calculated on a statewide level. So the departments don't count them in their 10-year plans. But if you go to the statewide 10-year plan, they would be included in that picture. It's just the governor's office way of calculating them. They wanted to make sure that they were being done the same across the board for all agencies.
Go ahead. You can see that our graph does, it bottoms out and then it starts to come back up a bit. We acknowledge that we're not going to reduce forever without significantly reducing programs, but we do know we're going to hit a trough and then we're going to start elevating within the inflation rate or whatever is reasonable. And I think that as you also look at our 10-year plan, you can see that basically programs have remained the same. We're very similar. We're light for every year. For 10 years back, and we followed a good trajectory, and we plan to be responsible.
Thank you.
Representative Isaacson.
Thanks. So another way of looking at this, McHugh or Lacey, on page 11, because it says all funds, you're expecting an increase of other type of revenues to come in to help fund it, such as aerospace and such.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead, Lacey.
That is actually all I had on the graph, unless there's more questions.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you. I just said thank you.
Okay. Although there's audit findings are included in our agenda on our schedule, we will not discuss the details of the audit as they solely apply to technical issues and federal compliance and have no financial impact on the DMVA budget. Alaska Aerospace Corporation, Aerospace Facilities Maintenance, will provide an overview. Here to present to us today is Craig Campbell, the President and CEO of Alaska Aerospace. He is on the phone from Austin, Texas. And John Kramer, the Vice President of Administration. John, come on up. And Mr. Campbell, are you on the phone?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, if you'd both, you and John, place yourselves on the record, and we'll hear your presentation.
Well, while John's setting up the slides, I believe, I will put on the record that I'm Craig Campbell. I'm the Chief Executive Officer and President for Alaska Aerospace Corporation, and I'm here to present the 2014 Alaska Legislature presentation of the 2015 Governor's Budget.
John, place yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Kramer. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer for Alaska Aerospace Corporation.
Okay, go ahead with your presentation.
Okay, so the first slide you should see is what I just read, the FY15 Governor's Budget Request, and that's just my introductory slide. So if you go to the next slide.
Wait a minute. Gabrielle. It's the one up there by your speaker.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Wait for everybody to catch up, Greg, just a minute.
Yep, yep.
Right there.
Even the slow chickens crossed the finish.
Okay, go ahead. You.
Okay, this is Greg Campbell again. We should be on slide two, the picture of Kodiak with all the facilities around it. Is that where we are?
Yes.
Very good. This is the same slide I used last year, so I won't go each component around and talk to you about it because it's the same briefing I did last year, and I gave you briefings about what each component does. The only reason I put it up here this year is I want you to look over to the left-hand side where it says Launchpad 3, Vehicle Processing Facility. You'll see it says 2015 with an asterisk next to it, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that later on. We are still pursuing medium lift at Kodiak. It is not off the table right now, but it's changed a little bit in our focus, so I will talk about that a little later on as I go through my presentation. Next slide, please. This slide is titled the FY14 Operating Budget Amendment, and as you remember last year, the legislature added an amendment to the budget, and I quoted it here. If Alaska Airspace does not secure a multi-year commercial launch service contract by June 30th, 2013, you would be decremented $3 million. I highlight the fact that the result is we did sign a multi-year commercial launch service contract with Tacoma Miltech of Huntsville, Alabama on May 10th, 2013. And that is for a launch that will happen later this year. I know there's been discussion about whether it's a multi-year launch contract we have. Does that mean it's more than one launch or is it over a number of years? As we've read this, a multi-year commercial service launch contract means it has to be over multiple years, it has to be commercial, and it has to have a launch. It doesn't say multiple launches. It says service launch contract. And that's what we have with Miltech. And so we signed it in May of 2013 and actually charged and billed some services in the year 2013. So some of the money in the current budget that we had for 2013 was from Miltech, very little. I think it's about $100,000 or so. This year, as we're in the operating budget this year, we are collecting money from that contract from Miltech. The launch will be after the close of this fiscal year, it'll be next year, and the most significant part of what we'll collect from that contract will actually be in next year's budget. And so you're going to see how that weaves into why, one, I feel very comfortable only asking for $6 million this year, but two, a little bit more about why in the future years I feel very comfortable that our commitment to go from 6 to 4 to 2 is very consistent. So let's go to the next slide, which is CY 2013 accomplishments. And before I get into reading all of those to you.
Oh, Greg, just a moment. Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr.
Oh, yes, sir.
I've got a question. Thank you for being online, dealing with the multi-year commercial service launch contract. I mean, this committee did put that language in because, quite frankly, we were worried that there's just not enough of a demand for the Kodiak launch complex. And I don't know. I mean, I'll have to go back over the testimony, but, I mean, I was really hoping for a actual multi-year commercial service launch contract, meaning multiple years.
You meant multiple launch.
Multiple launches.
Yeah.
Over multiple years, hopefully. So I don't know if my recollection is very different than the commissioner. But I also wanted to ask a question about what a contract is, because we're going over HOAs, which I just heard about, and the heads of agreement, the MOAs, final investment decisions. I guess what's the term of the contract? Is this a done deal that this group will definitely have a launch next year?
This year.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, it is a contract for us is a commercial service contract, a real legitimate contract for services. There are actually penalty clauses in it if they don't complete the work they're doing. They are actively working this contract right now. We've had a number of visits to Kodiak from the team that's going to be doing the launch. This launch will happen. I can't tell you the exact date today for a number of reasons. One, the client doesn't want me to tell you. But more specifically, it may adjust itself slightly, but it is absolutely a launch that's going to happen. It's been budgeted. in the company's budget, fully funded in the company's budget, not ours, but the one we're contracting with. So we're not concerned about a lack of funding, a lack of rocket, a lack of payload, or a lack of capability. This is one that when I told you last year that I was close to having a contract, this is the one I was talking about. I mentioned it was real. We got the contract. I can tell you it's very real. And while I'm not going to quibble over words, there's a possibility that this contract may lead to more launches by the same company. I can't promise that today, but that's the direction we were heading last year. That's still the direction we're working now. And we passed the first hurdle with last year's budget. And I'll talk a little bit more about what we're going to be doing as I get through the next few slides.
Yeah, I might want to point out to the committee also that 2 years ago, I think you had a $10 million budget. Last year, we went to $8 million, and you said it was going to continue to reduce $2 million a year. This year's governor's request and your request is for $6 million, and indications are you're saying it's going to go to $4 million next year, $2 million the year after. So I feel pretty confident you are very confident with what you're doing and that we are headed in the proper direction at least. Representative, follow up from Representative Kawasaki.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the OMB 10-year plans under new corporation contracts. It's the tab immediately following those. And, you know, I'm looking at last year's where 2015 we anticipated 3.2 in other receipts, 4.5 in 2016, a million in 2017. And I'm looking at this year's, which is not anticipating any receipts for this year, and then maybe $1 million, but it's recorded down as federal. Can you explain that?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I do not have that in front of me, so I'd have to get back to you.
Representative Ledoux.
So if it has a commercial launch this year, 2014,
through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes, it'll be this calendar year.
That means the contract's over?
It means that launch is done. And I'm, through the chair, I'm not trying to quibble on the words again. I am discussing with this company about continuing services. We could very well be negotiating a contract that around the time the legislature ends will answer your questions in more clarity. But I can't speculate on that because I don't know. We're in negotiations. But that was the whole purpose of last year, getting us into the position where we could sign the first contract, which is multi-year, so that we could now open the door for more extended conversation for other launches. And we are in that process now.
Follow-up question.
You know, I basically support the concept of the, you know, the aerospace facility. I mean, you know, I'm from Kodiak originally. I was there right from the very beginning of this thing. And so, you know, I want to see it succeed. But I really don't think that this contract that you've negotiated is multi-year. Now, with that being said, you know, things are going in the right direction, but it doesn't look multi-year to me.
It does cover basically three state fiscal years. It has.
There is revenue coming in over three state years. But I don't want to quibble about it, Mr. Chair. Before we run out of time, I'd like to go through the rest of the slides. I'm going to change the conversation slightly. We're all focusing on launches at Kodiak. And I want to change your thought process. That's not why I took the job to get launches from Kodiak. I took the job to build Alaska Aerospace into a profitable business. The launches at Kodiak are part of that, but I do not think it is the sole solution. And, in fact, over this last year as I've been CEO, I think we have much more opportunity in diversifying the company into other areas of aerospace where launches may be a minor part of our income level in just a couple more years. So if you'd like, I'd like to continue.
Go right ahead, Mr. Campbell.
Okay, so the slide up there should be CY 2013 accomplishments. And the first one just mentions the multi-year commercial service launch for Miltech. We did that. We signed that contract, and we did get a little income. Right below it, though, is secured and completed a commercial service contract with Lockheed Martin to support Arctic testing of the mobile user objective system. That's a communication system that Lockheed's been developing for the federal government, and they needed to test whether it worked up well up over the Arctic Circle. Well up, they actually went about 600 miles, I believe, north of Barrow to do a test of the satellite system and the communication system. And we were the ones they contracted with to do that services. That created more revenue last year than the MILTEC contract did. That created about $400,000 in revenue to do that test up over the Arctic. And that was far from our relationship with Lockheed, where they referred us over to this section to do this type of testing, and we were very successful at it. Following right along, we continued our commercial service contract with Space Exploration. And I think Mr. Kramer mentioned at the earlier briefing today that we are under contract with SpaceX to do the tracking of the Dragon capsule. So every time you hear about SpaceX launching their Falcon rocket with the Dragon to resupply the International Space Station, we're under contract to do tracking of that Dragon capsule. And we've been collecting some revenue on that. And fourth, we partnered with the University of Alaska to go do the unmanned aerial systems test ranges with the FAA. And in December, just last month, the FAA selected Alaska as one of the six test ranges. And we're working closely with the university to how we can integrate ourselves into the unmanned aerial systems program. So the last three I've mentioned have nothing to do with rocket launches. There are other things we're doing. So go to the next page, please, and that's the accomplishments continued. And the top one talks about teaming with Rocket Plane Global in response to a Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, a DARPA solicitation for a new concept vehicle to place satellites into orbit. We are teamed a prime with Rocket Plane Global, and the selection will be within 90 days on a major contract that we are proposing a airplane-type approach to launch satellites. They would probably not launch from Kodiak. They may not even launch from Alaska. But the workforce and some of the development work that goes in that contract would be Alaska Aerospace Corporation, which means revenue for Alaska Aerospace. The next bullet down is a MOU that Governor Parnell signed with Governor McDonnell from Virginia. That initiated a relationship between the Virginia Commercial Spaceflight Authority and Kodiak on how we're going to complement the Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport, which is in Virginia, with our Kodiak launch complex. Now, the reason we did that is because Orbital Sciences launches now out of Wallops, and they've been launching out of Kodiak. So what Dale Nash and I are working on is developing a common partnership that can present a lower cost or more reliable launch component system for Orbital, whether they launch on the East Coast or the West Coast, basically a teaming concept, which we think will put us in a better position to market for stuff we've not been able to get because Vandenberg and Canaveral, Florida and California have been teaming together, and basically we haven't. We've been divided, and so it's been inconsistent. Lastly on that page, we signed an MOU with the Hawaii Office of Aerospace Development, establishing a joint focus team to identify projects in the Pacific. And the joint focus team is myself, Jim Crisafulli from the Aerospace Department in Hawaii, plus Luke Flynn from the University of Hawaii and Bob McCoy from the University of Alaska. And we've already had our first meeting, and we're looking at projects that the university and the aerospace industries in our two states could collaborate on to bring projects that are traditionally being done on the mainland to Alaska and Hawaii, and driving it through the university as well as driving it through the opportunities for what we have for aerospace development. And I'm going to talk a little bit about a couple of those as I move into the next few slides, because that's exciting. And it's going to give us a real opportunity to get some activity beyond just the Kodiak launch complex. So already I think I'm trying to help you understand the focus on Kodiak. While it's good, it is not the answer to our problem of making money. We have to diversify. We have to be doing different things. So go to the next page for just a second. I'll just round up some of the accomplishments we did in 13 before going to 14. So the next slide is simply we did get our FAA commercial spaceport license renewed, and that was valid. It's now valid for 5 years. That's good. I can now market. We did secure an international traffic arms regulation certification, which allows us now to conduct international business. We didn't have that in the past. So even if a foreign entity had come and said they wanted to do business in Alaska, maybe launch from Kodiak, we wouldn't have been able to do that because we hadn't been cleared through the ITAR that we could engage with foreign activities. We now can. There's still a lot of regulations if we do that we'd have to go through, but that was a major hurdle in what I'm going to talk about for some of our future plans. We supported the Coast Guard in removal of the Loran Tower at Kodiak that had been a kind of an obstruction in the way, and we're appreciative that the Coast Guard took that down. We supported the Kulak recovery for Shell. We actually were the site where they did some of the kept some of the fuel tanks that they helicoptered out to the site to actually get that thing back in the water. We supported the National Secretary's Conference, Secretaries of State Conference in Anchorage for Lieutenant Governor's Office, and we were featured in the May edition of the Alaska Magazine, and I'd encourage you to go back and look at that. It's designed as a tourist article about what's so great about Kodiak and what's so great about going up to Narrow Cape, and what they say is what's so great about it is they also have this great launch complex. So we've done a lot in the past year. In outreaching business development and changing our focus from just trying to capture the next launch. But I'm not going to forget about launches. I'll get back to that in a second. The next slide talks about some of our initiatives. This is where we started to change our direction. 2013, as the new CEO, I wanted to find out what do we really need to be doing to capture the right market for Kodiak and for Alaska and for our business. So we increased our participation in the National Space Symposium. That's held in April of each year. It's the largest space symposium in the country. Everybody goes there. We partnered with an engineering firm that does aerospace technical engineering when we were there this last year. And this next year, we're going to partner with that same company plus with Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport with Virginia. So that partnership we're developing is now going to be brought to the National Space Symposium as a team. To come talk to us about team launches. The next bullet is we initiate a contract with Wyoming Aerospace to evaluate our potential organizational changes to the company and look at potential new markets for business development. They have finished the first part of their report, and they're working on the second part of their report now. That probably will be due, they'll be delivering to us in the March timeframe. And it looks like that they're very excited that there may be some international opportunities. And that's partly why we went to get the ITAR certification, so that if that opportunity was there, we'd be prepared to market to the customer. The next one is we initiate a contract with Peak 3 to redefine potential business models for the operations of the Global Hawk UAS. And if you remember from last year, the Global Hawk is the large one. The Air Force flies it and NASA flies it. It's really an airplane, unmanned airplane. And we're going to get our final report from them in the next week or two. I think it's going to tell us that Global Hawks would be excessively expensive and the market's very thin for us to go into. So for the last 3 or 4 years, Alaska Aerospace has been talking about Global Hawks. We may actually get closure that this may not be a direction we're going in because of the expense and the cost. The next item is initiated discussions with the Pacific Command for support of theater defense. And this is part of our Hawaii relationship and the joint focus team. There are two different initiatives going on in the Pacific Command to provide organic support to the Pacific Command area-wide. One of those is to provide a rapid response to be able to put in small CubeSats, communication satellites, anywhere in theater if they ever needed to for emergency response to for humanitarian support or military actions necessary. And they're talking to us. I've already had two meetings with the Pacific Command about our capabilities through our range safety and telemetry system, as well as our launch control operations to possibly be the contract services to provide that in theater. That could be some work in Alaska, could be some work in Hawaii, and it could be some work at other locations where the Pacific Command might need us. That is probably a 2016 initiative when it gets going. So this next year, we plan to develop that and mature that. The next bullet talks about discussions with the University of Hawaii to support small launch operations in both Hawaii and Alaska. This one is pretty important because the University of Hawaii is going to do a launch this year. It is going to be from the PMRF, which is the Pacific Range Missile Range Facility. And they're going to be doing a small CubeSat on a smaller rocket that's being done solely by the University of Hawaii. And they've contacted us because they said the restrictions they have at Kauai, at PMRF, restrict with only two launches a year, and they think the market is greater. They need another place to launch from. So we're actively talking about how we could support that up in Kodiak. And then you take the Pacific Command one I talked about above, and you take this one, and there is a third possibility of being able to use a different type of rocket, the smaller type that the university is working on, and actually use it within the Pacific Command for support that could be used theater-wide. These two together, which provide really three opportunities, are very good and very strong and very real. Now, I'm not going to have a contract next year, so if you believe I'm leading up to, I'll sign contracts with these people during this calendar year, that won't happen. But these are prospects that are coming to us. They contacted us, and they're interested in what capabilities we have. And quickly, we joined the Commercial Spaceflight Federation, secured a seat on the board of directors. That's the premier organization in D.C. that advocates for civilian commercial spaceflight operations and activities. I was very appreciative when they offered us a seat on the board of directors, because that means we'll be at the table discussing the direction of our national policy for commercial space. We rejoined the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance, MDAA, after a couple of years of being out of it, because we also believe that the Missile Defense Agency is interested in coming back to Kodiak. So we're exploring that, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that on the next page when I talk about UNSIL. Very, very important to us. Lastly, we have developed a concept for CubeSat launch program from Kodiak. CubeSats are very small. They're the size of a transistor radio. Their life expectancy is 2 to 3 years. Then they fall out of space and burn up. So the idea is to replenish space with these quite often. And we have an intern that's been working with us and developed a program where he could package these and launch them from Kodiak. And it looks like there may be some viability behind that. So we'll be pursuing that evaluation throughout this year. Now, let me go to the next slide, because I've also done a lot to make sure that I'm not spending more money than you're allowing me to spend. And you'll see a number of initiatives here that we did to save money. We consolidated our offices in Anchorage, reducing the space by 25% and also reducing our bill. I did not implement the state cost of living increases for employees. What I did is I spread that across the personnel and was actually able to hire an additional person that we needed, and therefore not have to go for additional funding to get that position filled. I reduced company travel 14%. And if you look at the travel, you'll see we actually were very active, but we were much more cautious about how we spent our money on airline tickets, hotels, car rentals, if we needed them at all. But the document will show 14% reduction in travel expenses. We did reduce our participation in conferences. I mentioned the National Space Symposium, and there's also the Space and Missile Defense Conference that we attend, but a whole bunch of others that we've been routinely attending, we just don't go to anymore. They didn't prove profitable for us. We eliminated the printed copy of our annual report, and I think I know I sent you a letter about a week ago that says our annual report is online. And I'm going to draw from it as I close my presentation out, because I'm very proud of the fact it looks good, but it also has some really good numbers in it. So I'd ask you to go look at our annual report electronically now. Reduced utility, supply, materials, and purchases. One of the big ones we did was establish a telecommunications contract to totally redo our system so it's modernized, more cost-effective. Also allowing us to take two positions that we had internally been using just for telecommunications and computer stuff and put them back into engineering and launch support. Those are two positions I do not have to hire for this launch, because now these people are doing the work that they actually had been initially hired for. We reduced some subcontract work, brought some work in-house, and had greater integration with the state purchasing contracts. So we did a whole lot to save money. And keep that in mind when I go to the annual report towards the end of this presentation. Next slide is our focus for 2014. And this will show you why I earlier said we're not just focused on launches. We're tracking the Alaska Radar System contract, which is all the radars across the state that the Air Force operates. That contract will come up at the end of this year. We are going to team with a company. We haven't selected one yet, or maybe we haven't been selected. Either way, we're still dancing. But we are going to go forward with the Alaska Radar System as one of the contracts we do, non-launch. We've developed our RSTS as a separate business unit, and that radar, that range station telemetry system, now we are actually going to start marketing to worldwide, so that while you don't have to launch from Kodiak, if you need a mobile range, we can still provide that service under contract services. We're in initial discussions with potential international customers, and there's two components here. One is government and one is commercial, and we're actually in conversations on both, and I really can't go any further at this time. We are going to establish a virtual office in Huntsville, Alabama, and that's because what is happening on the government side, the Army, through Space and Missile Defense Command, and to some degree Missile Defense Agency, which we used to have up here, both of them are interested in Kodiak. So we're going to have a virtual office that we can use when we're down there working on projects, on contracts, and on business development with those two agencies, and that should happen later on this year. We're going to pursue an unmanned aerial system commercial operations business unit, and it's not going to be Global Hawk. We're going to be looking at doing the commercial aspect of academic-developed UASs that now want to be commercialized to be the commercial component of that. And that's something that we'll work through in 2014. I do think that has a strong potential of happening within this calendar year. We are going to request federal matching funds for Kodiak. That I promised you last year, and we did. We went to our congressional delegation. They were unable to get plus-up money in the budget last year, but they know we're coming this year. We've already been talking to all three of our elected officials in Washington, and, in fact, I'll be there next week presenting the actual language we want them to put into the budget for 2015. That's not a promise that any three of them will do it. They have all acknowledged they know the need, and they all are interested in talking to us to consider our request. And so that will happen actually next week. Diversifying our business model by diversifying into non-traditional business lines, such as partnering with federal agencies on weather tracking. We're actively negotiating that right now and potentially picking up weather tracking capability in Alaska. Totally non-launch, but it's stuff we do. We launch balloons for launches right now at Kodiak, so we could do that same service for NOAA if they wanted to contract with us. So we are in the process of talking to them about that capability. And we are still working on Launchpad 3. Launchpad 3, Orbital Sciences, is the company that initially expressed interest. It was for the Antares rocket. They did not want to make a decision until after they had done successful launches out of Wallops. They have done those successful launches out of Wallops, and last month they resupplied the International Space Station with their Cygnus capsule off the Antares rocket. They now are receiving under a NASA contract of about $1.9 billion, enough money to sustain that operation that they now are looking again at their West Coast operations. John Kramer and I met with Dave Thompson, the president and CEO of Orbital, about 2 months ago, asked him when he's going to be ready to come back and talk to us, and it looks like this year is going to be a time to discuss whether they're going to pursue a West Coast operation or not. Coupled with that, though, we are also looking at that Launchpad 3 as a potential area where we could do multi-services. So that work I was talking to you earlier about with the Pacific Command and the University of Hawaii, it's possible we could configure that pad to do more than just medium lift. And that could give us multiple operations from that facility, which would increase its capability and reduce our expense on having to purchase stuff to get a third pad out, or actually a fourth pad out there for a different type of operation. So there's a lot going on, and I want to wrap up pretty quick because I see the time's moving on. So,
Greg?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Representative Grunberg has a question.
Yes, sir.
Yes, you have here diversify business model by expanding into non-traditional business lines, such as partnering with federal agency for weather tracking.
Yes, sir.
And just a thought, have you given any thought to the possibility of expanding into ship tracking through Alaska Marine Exchange?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, John Kramer was beating me over the head about that just a week or two ago. Said, you know, now that we're ready to take this step and can do that type of tracking, we really need to go to the National Marine Exchange and show them what we're doing to see if there's interest. So you two must have been collaborating because I believe that's one of the stops I'll be doing fairly soon.
Just goes to show that great minds,
I
say.
I concur.
Hold on.
I have a question about
Representative Kawasaki has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Craig. On Launchpad 3, last year you spent a lot of time discussing the need for a medium lift pad, and that was part of the reason why we can't find contracts anymore. And I guess I'm wondering if your mind has changed or if there's a difference in the markets today.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, no, my mind hasn't changed. I don't think the market changed. We only had really two customers who were talking to, and it was Orbital Sciences and Lockheed Martin. I do think Lockheed Martin has had a tougher time find new customers for Medium Lift. They don't have the NASA contract that Orbital has. So SpaceX got a contract and Orbital got a contract, and they're both operating now. So Orbital is still very interested, and they actually were the initial company that contacted the governor. So I think, well, last year it sounded heavy Lockheed Martin. I'm not speaking heavy Lockheed Martin this year because I do believe that they're finding the competition with SpaceX and Orbital already being in the business a little challenging for them. But we're still talking to Lockheed. But right now, I'd put my cards on the fact that if we get Medium Lift in Alaska, it'll probably be Orbital Sciences.
Follow up.
Does the delay in the construction of the port impact the overall when Launchpad 3 can come online?
Through the chair, no.
Okay. Go ahead, Greg. Continue.
Okay. I only have a couple more slides. The next ones are 15 baseline budget. And I've already basically talked all of this. We're asking for $6 million. The governor's put it in his budget. It's a $2 million reduction from last year. Our current launch contract allows for that reduction. We will have sufficient cash flow. We're assuming for the next year to have no federal ONS spending, because as it goes in the budget with the Fed, if we get it, it'll be for the following year. Our current workforce will be maintained. No expansion of operations. Launchpad 3 will not be operational this next year, although we may be doing some construction on it, if we won't be launching from it. And KLC has maintained operational status for current launch contract. So kind of status quo at Kodiak. Next slide, please. This I want to just spend a little bit of time on because I think it's a great story, and I'm very proud of what the team at Kodiak and Alaska Aerospace has done in my 15 months now of being CEO. The top line shows our general funds RDU totals. FY14 management plan, $8.1 million. FY15 governor's budget, $6.1. $2 million reduction, 25.2% reduction. I stand by it. I'm going to do as good next year as I did this year, and you give me $2 million less. I think I'll do better, but I'll do at least as good. I am confident that I can do this. GF and other funds, which is the entire operation for us, FY14, $10.6. FY15, 10.1. We're going down almost $500,000, 4.6% reduction. I'm reducing what I'm asking, and I'm reducing what I'm spending. I'm going to be able to have a very refined budget. So I want to go back to the annual report and ask you to go back and look at it when you're done with this, specifically on page 13 and 14. Those are our financials. I'm just going to give you one highlight off of page 13. I don't have a slide on it. But the highlight on page 13 is you're going to see net operating loss. And it's going to say for 2012, it was $6.8 million. For 2013, it's $4.7 million. Now, you look at that and say, oh, my God, they lost almost $7 million last year. They're going to lose almost $5 million this year. But if you look also at depreciation, which is not cash, it's just the depreciated value of the assets we have. If you take out depreciation, we actually had a cash positive year this year. So on page 14, when you look at cash flow, all you have to look at is the very top. 2012, we had a $1.5 million loss. In 2013, we had an $827,000 profit. We were positive cash flow last year. And I'm projecting that to be as strong or better this next year with a $2 million reduction from the state. So I'm suggesting that what I told you to do last year, I'm doing. I've already reversed the cash loss. I am reducing the request of the governor and the legislature for money, and I will live by my 4 and 2 in the following years. I'm diversifying the business, and I'm getting money in is what you want. Is what you want is to have us make Alaska Aerospace profitable so we're not using state GF funds. That's the goal. I'll close with just my deferred maintenance because the governor was very generous this year. He recognizes that we're working hard to get business, and there's about a $2.4 million request for deferred maintenance. And the last slide just shows you basically the five main things. These are all modernization, upgrades, and expansions of capabilities we need to be able to do service. This is all really out of Kodiak. So I'd ask you to favorably consider deferred maintenance also because that will keep us in the game. We've got a modern facility. We're doing the business we promised we'd do, and I am on a positive cash flow, and we'll make it better next year. With that, I'm done, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Craig, for the committee's information. We didn't have the pages you were talking about, page 13 and 14, in those. I will get those to the committee so that they can take a look at those. Representative Ledoux, yes.
Yeah, it is Ledoux. It kind of looks like the decrease from the 2014 to the 2015 budget really isn't a decrease if you consider the deferred maintenance. Would that be correct?
If you wanted to say how much state money is being spent, you'd be correct. But deferred maintenance is very different in operations. I like to look at it this way. The $2 million reduction that I'm asking for in GF for operations this year, going from 8 down to 6, that will be made up for from revenues, from the launch I'm getting with this, with the Miltech contract and the other work you've seen us doing. And therefore, the next year we can go down to 4 because we'll be generating more work and therefore more non-state government funds. Deferred maintenance is we've had a deferred maintenance list like every other department in the state for a long time. And until last year, none of our deferred maintenance was ever provided. We were zeroed out in deferred maintenance every year until last year. First year we got any money. So our list is pretty extensive. If you don't fund that, we won't go out of business. I'm still going to do a launch next year, and I'm still going to bring in revenues. However, if you continue to not provide deferred maintenance, eventually it could get into capital replacement, which is far more expensive, or I won't be current enough to be able to attract customers.
Follow-up question.
Follow-up. So last year, the fiscal year 2014 was $8 million and some change. So in addition to that, was there deferred maintenance for 2014? And what was it?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes, there was. $400,000 was provided last year.
And that's not included in the 8.1 or the 8129.2, correct?
Through the chair, you're correct.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just ask Mr. Campbell or Mr. Kramer or somebody to, at some point, at least with this representative, come by and walk me through the last 10 or 15 minutes because I'm slightly confused, more than slightly. I don't need to take anybody's time now, but I'd like somebody to go over that and Gerberize it for me.
We'll see that they do that for you.
Thank you.
Through the chair, I'll be glad to. I'll try to be down there shortly, Representative Grunberg.
All right. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. And I'm only 40 minutes late for dinner. With that, it is now 6:39, and I adjourn this meeting.